Welcome to Near Death Experience Podcast. I'm Chaz Hathaway. Today we're going to share the experience, albeit short, experience of Connie. But then we're going to read a comment that she makes after her telling about her experience. This is on NDERF.org, the Near Death Experience Research Foundation website. She says, two nurses came into my hospital room to help me sit up for the first time since my injury and subsequent surgical repair. Just as they helped me to sit up on the edge of my bed, I passed out or fainted, falling back onto the bed. I had no awareness of the nurses or the hospital room during my time out. I found myself in a field of brightly colored flowers, with the sensation of a river flowing just beyond the flowers. The whole area was enveloped in a very bright yellowish light. Just on the other side of the river was a huge crowd of beings with no discernible faces or other body characteristics. I had an overwhelming sense of welcome, with the impression that they were beckoning me to join them. Although I didn't actually see her, I was aware that one of them was my grandmother, who had passed away about 10 years before. I can recall vaguely wondering if my father was in the crowd. He died when I was 11. I didn't actually speak to anyone, nor did I hear any words spoken to me. It was more just a very brightly colored vision with a sensation of joy and welcome. I awakened to find the nurses pulling me up by my arms to get me back into a sitting position. I asked them what had happened, and they told me that I had simply fainted and passed out for a few seconds. I did not tell anyone what I had seen, and there was no further mention of the fainting episode, other than telling me that this fainting often happens when one tries to sit after having been in a prone position for an extended period of time, in my case about 2 weeks. As brief as it may have been, this was probably one of the most wonderful experiences of my life. Having attended church as a child and teen, I am moderately skeptical of the value of organized religion, but have always believed in God, or some kind of higher power. This experience filled me with joy and hopefulness, and with the firm knowledge that our souls survive our earthly life. That's the end of her experience. And it's interesting to me, a number of things that, for one, that she was only fainting. I mean, from what the doctor said, it was just a faint. And one that could have been expected. It wasn't like this shocking, oh my gosh, she's, you know, code blue or whatever. It was more like, whoop, you know, maybe we sat her up a little too fast, so she fainted, so probably a little more gradual waking her up. But in that experience, she had a profound near-death experience. She's in this field with brightly colored flowers. Just that little detail alone is enough to green flag, okay, this is probably a near-death experience. She mentions the color of the flowers being bright. I mean, just that alone is something. But then the sensation of a river flowing just beyond the flowers. So there's a sense of knowing of things that she can't see in her vision. And then the whole area was enveloped in a very bright yellowish light. I don't know what to make of the yellowish light, except that it comes up sometimes in these near-death experiences. A yellowish, sometimes people say amberish, sometimes people say, you know, just kind of a cream-colored or off-white light that seems to be emanating from everything. At least that's what I've heard from various experiences. And then on the other side of the river, there's this crowd of beings with no discernible faces. Now, to us in the mortal world, that sounds kind of creepy. But in near-death experiences, that is common and also very comfortable. Those who are experiencing it feel this loving sense from beings that sometimes they can't make out their faces. And it's unclear, to my knowledge, whether most people are experiencing seeing someone with just, you know, I mean, just skin for face, or whether they just can't make it out, like there's something blurry about it, or whether it's just overclouded with light. Many people actually have said it's overclouded with light, But not everybody says that, so I don't know if that's always the case. But and sometimes they have face, you know, shape of a face, but it's, you know, also a little bit blurred and also a little bit light, too light to make it out clearly, and so forth. And so what that means, I don't know exactly, but it's consistent with NDEs that I've read before. And then she has this sense of welcome with an impression of being beckoned to the group. And then she has this sense that her grandma is there, even though she doesn't make her out specifically. That is also an indication of senses beyond the five senses that are common in the spirit form with those who've had near-death experiences. And she says she didn't actually speak to anyone, nor hear any words spoken to her. It was more of a brightly colored vision with a sensation of joy and welcome. That sensation of joy and welcome, I think sometimes when people first go beyond the veil, sometimes the communication, because it's telepathic, they're not clear if, well, is this, are they speaking to me, or is this just thoughts, or is this just impressions coming from them? And yet the impressions are so clear that communicating back and forth, they come to realize this is absolutely very clearly a form of communication. In fact, it's a communication that's much brighter and more clear than any clunky language such as English would provide. And so it could be that they are communicating with her, and that she's not there long enough to kind of come to terms with this new form of communication. But also it could just be this sense of welcoming and sense of inviting that they are feeling towards her without any direct communication. That's possible too. And it's interesting that she says that as brief as the experience may have been, this was probably one of the most wonderful experiences of my life. Near-death experiences tend to be very life-changing. The slight exception being when people shut them out. And most people don't shut them out from themselves. They'll just shut them out from telling other people. But they still let the experience profoundly change their own life. And that reflects on two of the most common after effects of near-death experiences, or the things that happen that that change people's lives the most regarding near-death experiences. The first being no fear of death, and the second being a profound change of life, or a profound change in their outlook on life, something like that. Now, the other thing that I wanted to share, and I partly want to share this because of a really nice comment that one of our listeners gives about dreams. And this is in the follow-up comments on nderf.org, on the page where Connie shares her experience. She goes on and says, since her, and the question was regarding whether anything has ever reproduced any part of the experience. And she replies that yes, it has, and goes on to say, since my near-death experience described above, I had one time an intensely realistic dream in which I talked all night with my father, who died of cancer when I was 11 years old. For several decades, I had had occasional recurring anxiety dreams about his death and the ensuing separation from him. In the anxiety dreams, I would dream that we learned he hadn't really died after all, but was in a nearby hospital. I would rush to the hospital because I wanted to tell him that I loved him. Each time I had the dream, once or twice a year, I would arrive at the hospital only to learn that he had just died for real. I had once again missed the opportunity to tell him. Then about 10 years ago, which was 9 years after my near-death experience, in one amazingly compelling dream, I actually was able to sit and talk with my dad for what seemed like many hours. I told him about my life, my daughter, my siblings, and my mom. When I told him about the recurring recurrent anxiety dreams mentioned above, and how, more than anything did, I had missed the chance to tell him how much I loved him. He smiled at me and said, "I always knew that you loved me." Throughout the experience, I was very well aware that it was a dream. When he finally told me that it was time for me to go back, I was so excited at having talked with him that I asked if I could come visit him again the following night. He smiled and said, "Let's give it a rest for now, but I promise that you will see me again." On about 3 occasions since then, I have been dreaming, again aware that I was dreaming, and I'd glance off to the side and see him nearby, just watching. He would sometimes smile and give a little wave, but we haven't talked since the one long dream where we had talked all night. That's the end of her explanation. But she then goes on in another question that says, "Is there anything else you would like to add about your experience?" She says, "I'm sure this is not at all related to either the near-death experience or the dream described above, but on about 3 occasions, I have had dreams where I was aware that I must be dreaming, but I could leave my body and float around, usually just inside my house. I felt that I was on my back up near the ceiling and could navigate through the house almost as if I were swimming." And I share both of those bits of her experience. That's the end of the experience. But I share those bits of her comments as a commentary. And we'll have more commentary in a moment after I share this comment from Delon, one of our listeners. So here's Delon.
Hi, Chess. This is Delon again. A while back, I think it was in the end of August or something, you were talking about this lucid dreaming and astral traveling. And there was some things that I kind of wanted to bring up that was kind of interesting to me. One of the things I know, and you know, with some of the dreams that, you know, my mom, your grandma had, and she had a lot of different dreams like this that seemed to be, come out true, you know. I've mentioned a few, and you've probably known some, but I know clear back when I first started being aware of this, I was in high school, and I was having really a tough time in school. I was so mad. I mean, I flunked 2 or 3 classes, and I thought, man, I got to get studying. And so I picked up my one book and started trying to go through it. And, oh, man, finally I was frustrated. I threw the book across the room, and I went over and picked it up. I thought, I got to get wet here. And so I started reading. But anyway, the next day, Mom came to me and she says, "Are you having a hard time in school?" Because I hadn't told her. And she says, "I had this dream that you're really having a tough time." I thought, wow, you know. And then other times was when my brother Nolan was on a mission, and she had a dream about him being hurt, and she didn't dream too much detail about it, but she wrote him and asked about it, and he says, "Yeah, I've been in an accident." He says, "I hit a car." He says, "My bike," he actually hit the car, a van, and went flying over it, and but he'd been in the hospital a little bit, but he was okay, kind of banged up in that. And there was a couple of gals from the ward that come there to see him in that. And she says, "Well, I told him I'd seen this in a dream." And he was quite intrigued, and he sent these pictures of several gals, women that had been in the room. And I just asked Mom if she would Well, some of the women had been a girl, but he sent her several pictures and wanted her to see if he could pick it out, the one that had been talking to him. And she had no problem. She says, oh, here's a gal that I've seen in there. And later on, this gal actually came to visit Mom some months later, and she knew her right off. You know, I know who you are, you know, when you come to the door. But anyway, I thought that was interesting. And Mom had, you know, lots of other dreams about different people, you know, neighbors or something that turned out to be true. But one dream, another one that she'd had be, again, on my mission. My mission had been changed. I was going to go to Mexico, and I was having a tough time learning the language. So I went to, you know, I got it changed. And so me and my companion went to the library to see where I was going to go, which was Scotland, in Edinburgh. And I was pointing to, oh, there it is right there on the map. Well, my mom wrote me a couple of days later. She says, go on. She says, has your mission changed? She says, I had a dream of you pointing to Edinburgh. Wow, I thought, amazing. I says, yes, you know, I told her it has been. And I guess her mom, too, you know, Grandma Freshwater, and you've probably heard this story, but she had a dream about her husband, Leo, that where he was at work, I guess he was working in this shack, a big rock come down from the Provo Mountain there or whatever and smashed his shed. And she told him, she said, I don't want you to go to work. They just, you know, he thought it was kind of silly and that. And she was so determined that I guess she had the key to the shed or something. And she wouldn't let him have it. She hit it down her blast. And he finally decided, okay, I guess I better not come. And he called and worked, told him he wouldn't be there. And a few hours later, his boss called and says, boy, it's so good thing you didn't come to work. He says, this big rock come down and smashed the building. You would have been killed. So that was amazing to me. And, you know, I've had a few dreams myself, lucid dreams things. I did have my wife's grandma. It passed away, and I dreamed that she come to me and told me that she was happy now, that things were fine, you know. And next day when I, you know, after waking up and that, Karen's mom would call and says, hey, grandma's passed away. And I told her, I know, you know. And I've had some other dreams. You've probably maybe heard. I dreamed about both my son, Corey, and my daughter, Heather, before they were born. I dreamed about fairly detailed dreams on them. I won't bring that up, but they were very interesting to me. And I haven't had many of those, but you were brought up the experience how you'd have these dreams that you were didn't know if you was dreaming or not. And to you, you know, you were trying to you dream you'd go see your kids, and you know, you actually come back to see if they were in the same spot in the beds or whatever, and they weren't. But I've had dreams like that, but to me they were more negative and scary. I dreamed that I was sleepwalking. I didn't know if I was sleepwalking. I dreamed that I knew I was dreaming, but I was not sure if I was awake or not, and that kind of scared me because one time, the only time that I know of when I did do some sleepwalking was when I'd fallen asleep in the front room watching TV, and Mom kind of woke me up. I guess I didn't really wake up, but I got up and walked to my bedroom, and she says she kind of followed me. It's a good thing she did. She says, I went in my bedroom, opened the window, and tried to climb out. And she hurried, grabbed hold of me, and led me to bed. And I went to bed, sleep, and I was okay. But I'd have these dreams that I was sleepwalking. It would scare me, because I wasn't sure if I was awake or not. So I'd try to go into my sister's room and make noise and stuff to try to wake them up, so they would wake me up. Well, it never happened. You know, I finally woke up. But another weird thing for me, when I do have nightmares, right at first I may not realize it, but later on I think, oh, this is a dream. You know, it is a terrible dream, and I don't want to be in this dream anymore. So I'd try shaking or do whatever I did, and I could wake myself out and get out of the dream. And I've been able to do that. So I know that I'm having a nightmare, and I can get myself out of it. Pretty cool, huh? But anyway, another thing that I had a companion on my mission that told me about an experience he had one time. He says one time he was laying on his bed, but he says he knew he was awake. And he says all of a sudden he was like in the spirit world. And he's walking around. He sees these spirits working, seem to be happy at what they were doing. And then he sees this one, quite an attractive woman. And he, you know, starts thinking about her, and then all of a sudden he was back in his body. I was like, that isn't where you're going to. But so these things are interesting, you know. Hope you get over your cough here soon. You're cold. All right, love you. Bye-bye.
Thank you again, DeLon, for calling in. There's some really fascinating stuff there, and thank you, too. My cold is slowly getting better. I think I'm past the worst of it, and now I've just got just a little scratch in my voice, but it's going away as well. But I love this topic of dreams, and one of the things that I think is worth bringing up, because, you know, this is a near-death experience podcast, not a dream podcast, and some people will even say, well, that's not a near-death experience, that's a dream, you know, and a dream is just the brain doing its thing during sleep and so forth. But I think we do ourselves a disservice when we chalk everything up to a dream that is a dream. I think the dream mind has a connection to the spirit that is unique, and one that often can be something of a connection to the other side of the veil. That's not to say that it always is, but it can be. And in many of the instances that DeLon talks about, clearly that's the case. Clearly that there is something more going on there. And it's also interesting to me that one of the often after effects of a near-death experience is having more insightful dreams, if you will. Now, there's a lot of people, myself sometimes included, that you don't have to have a near-death experience for that to be the case. I think it's actually very common. And the biggest difference between those who have insights from dreams as well as deep spiritual experiences and those who don't is probably those who don't most often just shrug it off as a dream. And when they shrug it off, they're more likely to forget it. They're less open to the possibility. And also, there are many people who simply don't remember their dreams. And to them, whether they have insightful dreams or not, they wouldn't even know it because they've forgotten their dreams. And unfortunately for many, as they get older, they forget them more and more. But I think it's worth at least considering the possibility for all of us to consider that maybe there was more to that dream than just what, you know, just what the brain does while I'm asleep. And true that some of those times it's going to be not necessarily of any spiritual importance. I mean, like I said, the ones wandering around my house and you know, checking on the kids, and they're in different beds than they really were, and so forth. And yet, there may be something of a memory, perhaps, or a reflection, if you will, on what the spirit can or may experience in something like a near-death experience. I think it's healthy to become attuned with such things, not necessarily as a religious practice or in some way to try to, you know, push yourself beyond the veil and so forth, but to become comfortable and familiar with your dream states and the different insights that you can gain from dreams, because sometimes I think there is spiritual insight to them. And I think there is sometimes in lucid dreams, I will have, you know, some of the sensations that sound common to near-death experiences, despite the fact that I don't have anything that matches a near-death experience in them. It's, you know, this is all just discussion and curiosity and so forth. And yet, if I were to have a near-death experience and experience some of those sensations, I think I'd be more likely to consider it a near-death experience when I woke and realize, oh, there's that sensation again. And I think in the dream, we can often have a blur between the imaginary world that is in our mind and the spirit world that is the real, true nature of our reality. It's like we're stepping in this in-between realm where, yeah, none of this is real that you're seeing in a dream, and yet it still has some connection to the spirit world. And I say that because I've heard of people who have had dreams where there are bizarre things happening in the background, as is common to dreams, and yet they're speaking to a loved one who has gone beyond the veil, and they have a profound experience with them. Basically, I don't think it's a dichotomy. I don't think there's either it's a dream or it's a spiritual experience. I think there can be something of both. And I think it's going to take most people a little bit of time and just familiarity with different experiences to realize which ones are deep, spiritual, meaningful experiences and which are just our brain doing its thing. And in the examples that Dilan shares, it sounds very much like these are spiritual-based experiences. And, you know, Leola Curtis, who Dilan is speaking of, who is my grandma, and again, in case you haven't heard previous conversations we've had with Dilan, Dilan is my uncle, my mom's brother, and one I feel very close to. And hearing about some of these experiences that both he has had, that his mom has had, and his mom's mom has had, which would be my great-grandma, with dreams and other kinds of spiritual experiences, makes me wonder how much of a genetic aspect there may be to these kinds of experiences or gifts. I think the biggest thing that seems to be the biggest influence on whether people have these kinds of experiences, however, seems to be an openness to the possibility. And of course, you know, as with any kind of experience, you obviously want to be careful and make sure you don't cross over into any, you know, taking up, you know, communication with spirits that mean to do you harm, because those are out there, no question. But I think having that openness allows us to be able to get some experiences with the other side, even if only in small ways or in experiences that may make a difference in the personal life of the individual or to their family. And I'm glad also that he mentions his mom, because shortly after making this phone call, he called back after hearing the episode where I shared the near-death experience of Leola Curtis. And to any of you who heard that and are interested in a follow-up to that, more information, if you will, when Dilan called back, he gave some really fascinating, interesting information about that period of time when Leola was approaching death. much of which I was not aware of, and am fascinated by it. So here's Dylan's follow-up call after hearing the experience about his mother, Leola Curtis.
Hi, Chaz. This is Dylan. I just listened to your podcast about Leola Curtis, my mom, and your grandma. And, wow, that really brought back some very tender memories of what took place. Sorry. I just want to say that I think, Mom, I was probably closer to her than almost anybody. I think she kept me closer to the Lord than anyone, just because of the way she was. And but anyway, I wanted to say about this that time that she did temporarily died or had that near-death experience, and she told me too, you know, many of the same things, because I was at the hospital there when she kind of had one off, and later on she was real concerned, and she wanted us three boys, us older boys, to go talk to Dad, because to tell him that she was going to go, and just to kind of warn him, because she was so worried about him. And, oh man, that was hard, but we did it. And, anyway, I guess through this experience she had, that she realized that she had been able to have a little longer to live. And she told me that her dad, Grandpa, had come to her and told her that it was okay, that she'd be able to live a little longer. And, of course, I was so happy. And I remember, I think it was getting around Christmas or her birthday. I believe it was Christmas. And Sterling, you know, my little brother, we wanted to buy her a video recorder and player. But then when this had happened, before we know she could live longer, we thought, no, maybe we better not buy it. She's not going to be here. Well, we bought it, but we didn't know whether to give it to her. Well, after we heard that, we were so happy, and we gave it to her, and she had the funnest time recording, you know, movies and stuff for some, you know, for a couple more years, a few more years while she lived. And another thing that was quite interesting about when she passed away for real, like you said, at the time, our siblings had been watching her, you know, and helping, because poor Dad, his, you know, he was in that dementia and just didn't hardly know what was going on. And anyway, it got to the point after, oh, I guess it was probably 7, 8, 9 months, that some of the siblings, it was really becoming hard for them, because they, you know, they had large families of themselves, like your mom, raising them, and we just decided maybe we better put her in a rest home. And I just, oh, that really bothered me, because I didn't want to do that. I didn't know how Dad would take it, you know. But I guess she got real bad one time, and Patsy, she told Patsy, she says, well, go ahead, call somebody. You know, call Nolan, to the older brother, to get somebody, you know, to find a place for her to go. So she went up to call Nolan, and I think between my mom and the powers of be, Heavenly Father, by the time she come back, Mom was gone. And to me, I thought, you know, that's amazing. And then when you told about that rainbow and that hawk and that, or whatever it was, that, there's just some really wonderful things here. But I just wanted to bring these out, and I want you to know, often when I'm talking to her, she would mention about you. She really thought a lot of you. I mean, she did all her grandchildren, but I know there was a special, special thing there. So I just thought I'd let you know. I miss that dear woman, and I can't wait to see her again. Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Delon. I miss her too. And, you know, after you shared this, called in on this and I listened to it, I thought, I wonder if I have any recordings that she made after her experience. And the first one I found was a little 5-minute recording that she made. She's talking about a song that she was listening to on the Lawrence Welk show, and it got her thinking about things a little bit. And as I'm listening to this, she started talking just briefly about her hospital stay. She doesn't go into her experience, near-death experience at all, but she talks a little bit about how grateful she is to have been able to come back. So when I came across that, I'm like, I've got to share this a little bit. So I'm going to share a little piece of this here. This is a recording of Leola Curtis after her experience, but before her stroke, when she still had a little bit of time on this earth.
This is Mom and Grandma to some of you. And this is December 1988. Well, I was going through some of my tapes. See, every time Grandpa and I like something on TV or the radio, I just turn on the recorder. Well, I was doing that this morning with the Lawrence Welk recording. And I remember how surprised I was. This one tune is one that I really like. Oh, I danced with just about every one of you children with it, I think, when you were little. And I think they called it, "You Belong to My Heart, Now and Forever." Oh dear, that's hard singing. Anyway, it's one that's real close to my heart. And I was just enjoying it thoroughly. This morning when I was hearing it, I was also thinking about a year ago when I was in the hospital and two of my friends were there and they were both really ill. All three of us were so ill we couldn't even get up and go see each other. We'd just ask the nurses how the others were doing. And my two friends didn't get out of the hospital. At least they didn't come home again. So I was the only one that was lucky enough to get well. And I'm so appreciative, so thankful for having extra time. I just can't explain it to you, but life is so full of wonderful things that I just feel like there's no time to waste on sadness or on, it's hard to say this. Anyhow, I'm real glad to be here. And I want all of you to enjoy it. Okay, I didn't know this was going to be this hard. But it's too short to hold feelings. It's too short to be angry. It's too short for all the bad things. Just enjoy the good things. Just appreciate each other. Be glad you've got each other.
You know, coming across that recording, I've heard it before, but coming across it in the context of the near-death experience was a very interesting thing for me, because so much you hear of people who don't want to return. I just wanted to stay. I just wanted to say, don't make me go back, and so forth. And yet here's a woman that's telling her story in her darling, you know, Central Utah accent, which I always loved, about how grateful she is to be back, to have more time. And I think that can only come from someone like her who has learned what this life is really about. It's about love, and it's about joy and the positive things that life has to offer, and the opportunities to grow and learn and to feel that love, to enjoy music, to enjoy other people, to do good. And I think that ought to be one of the great messages, both of the near-death experience and of our life experience here on Earth. So with that, thank you all of you again so much for listening.